Where you're at in Texas, you're kind of in the heat of things as we're talking about New World Screwworm. Give us an update from a producer and a Texan perspective about the movement and what you continue to watch.
You know, well, I guess let's just kind of start like the latest news. As of this week, we are actually going to be seeing some sterile flies that are going to be hatched at the Moore Field Airfield Dispersal Center. And those flies are going to be dispersed into Texas, kind of at least 50 miles along the border within that polygon. The polygon has shifted north. So that's certainly something that we are glad to see a proactive approach by USDA and COPEG and those groups that, you know, let's be proactive about getting those sterile flies out there. Another thing along with that is those pupa are actually the sterile fly pupa are dyed with a fluorescent dye so that it shows up under ultraviolet light, because obviously now we're going to be seeing some of those sterile flies showing up in those traps. And so for quicker identification, it's going to be important. So that's another thing that's happening right now. We continue to, obviously, we see those cases in Tamaulipas as they continue to advance north, and we certainly hope that the sterile fly facility that's in Mexico at Matapa, you know, it can't get here quick enough for us. We're hoping that maybe, we heard today, maybe in, you know, late summer, we're going to start seeing some of those flies available as well.
When you look at it from an animal health perspective, from a producer perspective, knowing there's the two treatments that are now available, mm-hmm. I don't want to say, are you less concerned, but are you, does it come across differently than it did the last time it was here?
Yes, we have tools available to us now that we did not have. You know, we are certainly glad that approval process has happened before it got here. I mean, that was our concern early on, and when we certainly had those conversations with CVM and USDA and the companies that bring those products, let's get those products out there, make sure that we have a large enough volume of inventory to make it. But yes, those products combined with the sterile flies can, I guess, give us a little reassurance that these first cases are not the start of just a widespread infestation, you know, like we did in the 1960s. This could be more like something from 1966 to 1980, when we still had as many as 90,000 cases in 1972 of the New World screwworm that had to be stamped down, put out. We had to sterile flies to do that. We will have these products available as well to use in our toolbox. And so these products, as a tool in our toolbox to help us, will help control the numbers in the environment along with the sterile flies.
Talk to me about your scouting animal health practices. What do you do as a producer to look for them? What are you looking for? How often are you? Take me through that process.
Great question. And it's so, first of all, we're a generation has not had to deal. We got a couple of generations that have not had to deal with this. So it's going to take us having to be better stewards when it comes to animal husbandry skills. When I say that, you know, if you see it cut, it's not, well, we'll wait till tomorrow, or it's on its foot, it's a long ways from its heart. You know, that's a term we like to use in our industry. No, those are the cases that will be screw on my eyes the next day or 2 days later. And so it's when you see, when you've got to put your eyes on those animals every day, if you can, or at least every other day. And when you see cuts and things like that, you have to treat them. We also have these tools, whether it be the porons or the injectables, that we can use either on the treatment side, but more importantly would be on the prevention side. When we're castrating, when we're ear tagging, when we're dehorning, all those things, along with, you know, some of our producers are small producers and they leave their bulls out year round. Well, they're going to have to determine, you know, yes, maybe I don't want to pull that bull out for a certain time of the year, but is that a cheaper cost to me to pull that bull out for 3 months out of the year, so I don't have those calves during the summertime when it's, you know, the threat will be greater than obviously the wintertime. So if we can, our calving practices, calving during the wintertime, those are things that we can, we calve in the wintertime, we do that first work, castration, marking in the wintertime, that plays an important role in the prevention of that.
You were in the meeting today, the animal health, livestock health meeting. What are some of your takeaways from whether it's New World screwworm or it's Asian longhorn tick, which is another, in my part of the world, is an issue we're battling already?
Yes. It's like we also, along with that, then we have the fever tick on our southern border that our association and our members along the border have to deal with too. And so it is certainly challenging, isn't it? It's like, wow. I think it's important whether it's the fever tick that we deal with, the screw worm that obviously is the big threat, or the Asian longhorn tick. First of all, knowing that life cycle and knowing what we can do from a practice standpoint, from a preventative standpoint, you know. And so some of the, by coming to the cattle con and attending these meetings, I've learned more about the Asian longhorn tick and some of the things that we may be able to do to try to prevent or slow down the spread of that into Texas. But it's certainly going to be something that we will be dealing with as an industry for the foreseeable future.
Outlook on, as a producer in that part of the country, knowing we're still not bringing live cattle in from Mexico, how concerned are you in terms of industry health, thinking financially about the feedlots and some of those producers who aren't full right now?
No, it's the worst part about this deal is because every decision that you make and it affects some other facet of our industry. So we worry about those numbers from a feed yard standpoint. You know, their ability to stay viable and is important. Those cattle from Mexico were a big part of that. The same way with the packing side of this equation too. You know, we've already seen, you know, we lost one shift there at the plant in Amarillo, you know, and those are, you know, we see when you go back to 2014, 2015, the cattle cycle, and we lost a 5,000 head per day plant there in Plainview, and they never come back. So yeah, it's a concern. We understand though that movement has been the biggest reason why it's gotten from the Darien Gap to here this quickly is illegal movement of cattle and those things. And so these are all issues that we have to work through. But I think our position has been with cattle raisers has been, when Secretary Rollins and USDA feel like the cooperation from Mexico is there and that it's safe to open up the border and those things, that they will open up the border and we will just see how that goes. But we certainly have stated from the very beginning where whatever the USDA, because they certainly know what's going on in Mexico in terms of surveillance and treatment inspection and those things. And I think the Secretary Rollins has stated when they're comfortable with all those protocols that are in place, then they will open the border.